How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Figure 4 Daily. It is March 2nd, 2010, here at figure4online.com. We're joined by Paul Bearer, a.k.a. Percy Pringle. Been quite a while, actually, since you've been on the show there, Percy. But how you doing?
I'm doing good. I was just thinking that, gosh, I can't remember the last time I was on the show. It has been a long time, and I appreciate you inviting me back for sure.
It's been quite a while, and I don't want to start off on a sad note, but I did want to offer condolences. Your wife passed away since the last time we'd been on the show, and I know we talked about that in the past, and hopefully everything is doing all right for you right now.
Yeah, it's been a rough few years. Most of the fans know that my wife battled breast cancer 2 times, and she kicked out of it both times, and then the cancer came back and just kind of went everywhere. And then on January 31st of 2009, just a little over a year ago, she passed away. We were married 30 years, and
wow.
It's been a rough year, Brian, but with the good Lord and my family and my friends, and we're going to make it. That's what she expects me to do. I don't have another choice. I got to keep going.
Well, I don't want to get into too many personal things here, but it is interesting. You mentioned being married for 30 years, and obviously you were on the road for a good deal of that. And you know, the Ric Flair thing obviously is on the front page of our website today. The 911 call. He just got married again, and the police were called. And I guess if you had advice. There are a lot of young people now trying to get into the business, and they're in the business that may listen to this. And what kind of advice do you have for making things work in a marriage while being a part of this business?
First of all, I was just very, very blessed. I mean, she was just an angel, and now she's my guardian angel without a doubt. It takes a very, very special lady to put up with the bullshit that professional wrestlers and those of us in our industry do, as you know. Just as far as the lifestyle and the travel and everything, it just takes a very, very special person. And, it just takes a lot of love, a lot of trust, and a lot of faith in each other. And it's hard. It is really, really hard. A lot of young guys, you know, they work their butts off getting their bodies right. They train in the ring and everything. And then there's that little part at home. If that's not right, ain't none of it going to work. It's that simple.
Now, it's interesting also that, you know, oftentimes you talk to people that have been in the business as long as you have and they've got children, and you always ask, you know, would you ever want your kids doing this? And as it turns out, this coming Friday, your youngest son is working an independent show. He's in the business. And tell us a little bit about that and how he's doing.
Yeah, my youngest son, first of all, I have 2 sons. My first son, my oldest son named Michael, he just turned 30 not too long ago. And, my youngest son, Daniel, he turned 23 on January the 8th. Daniel was born, when I was in Dallas with the Von Erichs. That's when he was born. He learned how to walk in the ring at the Sportatorium. And that's a fact. He did. Just hanging onto the ropes and walking around the ring. So, Michael wasn't really born in the business, but Daniel was. And I guess it was kind of predestined for him to get in the business at one point or another, because he was always around it so much. All through the years when I was with WWF, WWE, every summer he would travel with me on the road, make the road trip, be in the dressing room. It was just predestined for him to do that. He's doing well. He really is. He's married, has a 2-year-old daughter, and he's doing well. He just works the indie shows, you know, in the area. He has a real, unquote, job.
Sure.
And he knows, and I've told him many times, you know, if I ever thought it was right for him to move up, and if he wanted to move up, I could always, you know, help him out a little bit. But until that time comes, you know, I don't know. A lot of guys, you know, they're very happy, and they should belong, you know, at the indie level. And he's happy, and I'm happy, and he's doing well. And you're right. I'm going to manage him at an indie event this Friday night. He's going to be wrestling Robert Gibson of the Rock and Roll Express.
Oh, wow.
Which we have a history with him, of course. He's from Pensacola. He's right down the road from me, you know, here in Mobile, Alabama. He's from Pensacola, Florida. And we've known Robert since he was, my God, I'm so damn old. We've known Robert since he probably was 10, 11, 12 years old.
Wow.
And when he used to sell pictures for his brother, Ricky, when Ricky was a wrestler back when I was first started going to the matches. Ricky Gibson was a name along the Gulf Coast area, and his little brother Robert would be out in the audience selling his pictures, and that's where we first met him. And gosh, a lot of stories, Brian. I don't want to waste your time.
Well, actually, I got a lot of questions about that area, but I'm looking at your blog, and there's a picture of you and him in the ring, and we've talked in the past about your weight, and you've lost a ton of weight. I mean, I think at one point you were up above 5, and it looks like you're well below 3 in this picture.
Well, I'm near 3. I wish I was well below 3, believe you me. Yeah, I had gastric bypass surgery in 2003, right before I came back with The Undertaker at WrestleMania 20. That was a rough time for me there. But anyway, I weighed 525 pounds when I had gastric bypass surgery, and I lost 240 pounds at my top. But over the last couple of years, everybody can make excuses, and I can sit here and make excuses all night, but it's all my fault. Over the last couple of years, when I've been dealing with my wife's illness and a lot of personal problems and stuff, I have put back on about 40 pounds. So I'm still right at, 300 pounds or just a little bit over 300 pounds. But after you've weighed 525 pounds, a lot of people can't understand this. When you've weighed 525 pounds, you feel fantastic at 300, believe you me.
Yes.
But I'm doing well. I mean, I could stand to drop a little bit more, but we're doing fine. We're just rolling right along.
Now, when you had the surgery, for those that are unaware of it, I mean, what exactly do they do, and I guess what differences did it make in terms of how you'd lived your life before and how it made things easier to drop the weight?
It certainly wasn't easy at all. You know, there's a lot of folks that's never suffered from obesity, especially morbid obesity, weighing that much. And a lot of people look down on folks that have the surgery. They say it's a quick fix, this and that and the other. It certainly was not a quick fix. It was a permanent, life-altering surgery, where they make adjustments to your plumbing on the inside, where your stomach is stapled and they reroute your intestines. That's why they call it bypass. They bypass, several feet of your intestines where you don't absorb a lot of the nutrients, and that causes a lot of problems because you don't absorb a lot of things that you need, such as vitamins, calcium, so you have to take supplements pretty much the rest of your life. But you got to be very careful. You can gain the weight back. And with me, it's not necessarily the food problem because your stomach is reduced to a certain size. My problem is sugar. I love Coca-Colas. I love Pepsi-Colas. I love soft drinks. And that's one thing, if you're hooked on those things, where you can, circumvent the surgery and put back on some weight if you keep drinking those, which I stopped for a long time, but here I go again, everybody's got to do something. I have a Coke in my hand a lot, and if I could just lay those damn things down, I'd do a hell of a lot better.
What about
we're doing good. We're doing good. My blood pressure's good. My cholesterol's good. I won't bitch, Life's good. We're still alive, and we're still playing around with wrestling, and I guess I'll do that to the day I die.
Now, the other day, actually about a week ago, there was a WWE pay-per-view. I'm sure you heard about it, and Undertaker's coming down to the ring, and his pyro is set off at the wrong time, and he is engulfed in flames. And, of course, he luckily wears a duster and everything like that, and he threw everything off, and he only suffered burns on his chest and a little bit on his face. And I guess the question to you, having managed him for so many years, and obviously he had pyro for many of those years, I mean, is it surprising that it took this long for this to happen, or was it something that actually had happened before and nobody knew about it?
No, it's nothing that ever happened to that extent. He was very, very lucky, especially, working with Kane, too. You can remember back when we used to have those Inferno matches.
That's right, yeah.
Well, I mean, man, they had gas pipes. So all the way around the ring, surrounding the ring, natural gas that was shooting out of them damn things. And I just standing there, doing what I did. Oh, yes, and hold the damn urn. I would come back from the ring, and I would have like a sunburn because it was so hot. And those guys, in the middle of the ring, in the middle of all that fire, considering all the special effects that we've done through the years and all the dangerous gimmicks and stuff, it is really amazing that something like that didn't happen before. He's very, very lucky. He could have been very seriously injured. I didn't actually see the pay-per-view live, but I did see a tape of the incident. And my God, bless his heart, he was very, very lucky.
Yeah, I was at WrestleMania last year, and obviously it was a big building, and I wasn't even close to the aisle. I mean, I was several rows up, you know, off the floor. I'd say a good, you know, many hundreds of feet away. And when Undertaker came out, they set off all of that fire, and I remember feeling the heat where I was sitting. And I was just, I couldn't even believe that as far away as I was, I could feel this blast of heat when that pyro went off. And I just thought, I can't even imagine being in the middle of this as you're walking down that ramp. I just feel like I'd spontaneously combust.
You're right. It's hot. It is really, really hot. And while you were talking, I had a flashback to back during one of those Inferno matches where Kane got set on fire, where he actually caught fire. That was him. You know? And they had a lot, and you know, Vince uses the best professionals in the industry without a doubt, because he's very, very concerned about the health and welfare of his stars, no matter what some of the fans think. He is, and it's dangerous. It really is, and Mark has been very, very lucky, and he knows it.
Have you had a chance to watch a lot of the WWE TV of late and see some of the build to the Michaels Undertaker match at WrestleMania this year?
Yeah, I don't watch as much as I used to watch, because there was my whole life would come to a standstill when wrestling was on. I mean, that was just the way I lived for years and years and years. But over the last couple of years, I watch as much as I can, and if I'm not doing anything else, of course, if it's on, I watch. And the last few weeks, I have been watching. I did watch last night, and Taker and Shawn's match last year. My God, how can they top that? And I've talked to both of them about it, and it's going to be a hell of an event.
Have they mentioned the possibility of attempting to top it? Because, you know, I think about it, and it's like, okay, it's a year later, they're both a year older, they're both a year more banged up, but I also think that I saw him have the Hell in the Cell in 97, which was a phenomenal match, and then in 2009, you know, 10, 12 years older and more broken down, I mean, they had a better match, so I'm not putting it past them. I mean, I think it's going to be tough, but I'm not putting it past them.
They are just the consummate professionals in every sense of the word. And obviously, you know, being the consummate professionals that they are, they will certainly try to top it. I would love to see them top it, and I don't know who. I just don't know. I'm just as anxious as all the fans are out there to see the event, you know, and I can't wait.
I remember I was actually going back, and I think it was around 1995. I was looking up some information on the Monday Night Wars. And I was reading what was going on in WWE at the time, and there's just a brief blurb about how Undertaker is really banged up. This was 1995, and then of course, obviously he's had his work done on his hips and such here in 2009, and you've been with him, I mean, since he debuted in WWF, and it seems like he's a guy that he's been banged up for like an eternity, but he just keeps going.
He does. He does, not to try to sound funny or anything, but he's like the Energizer Bunny. But a lot of folks don't know, I go back with him before WWF.
That's right, yeah.
Back to the Texas days when he first started in the business. I managed him in his first match that he had there at the Sportatorium in Dallas against Bruiser Brody. And he had on a mask, called him Texas Red. And he said then, and he'll tell you now, that the only reason that they sent me to the ring with him that night was to show him the way back. Because Bruiser Brody beat the dog shit out of him, you know, all over that building.
Sure.
And, yeah, you're right. It's been, you know, a lot, you know, I hate to sound like, I play like I played the Undertaker's trumpet all the time. Oh, he's just saying that, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I'm a straight shooter. I don't bullshit, you know, and When I say something, I believe it in my heart and in my soul, and The Undertaker is, without a doubt, the ultimate gimmick ever in this industry, ever, bar none. Nobody has done what he's done in this business. Nobody has lasted. Nobody has had the longevity with Vince's company like he has. I don't care who he is, or what they say. Mark is, once again, I'll use that word, he's a consummate professional. He's in and out of the ring. He's just good people. He's just good people and a dear, dear friend, that a forever friend of mine that I've been very blessed to know and be associated with the rest of my life.
You know, I got a couple of questions about, I mean, you mentioned, you know, starting out with him, and I mean, have you guys ever talked about, let's just say that he decided, okay, next year's WrestleMania, this is it. I've gone long enough. I'm going to make a big deal. Maybe even 2 years from now, will it be 20-0 on the streak would be the big question, and he's going to retire undefeated at WrestleMania or not. I mean, have you guys ever talked about maybe, you know, if the day comes that he knows the date of his final match, you going out there with him so that you guys kind of started and ended his career together?
I would never, you know, I've been in this business too long to never say never. I won't say never. It could happen. You know, I won't say no. We shall see.
And then the other question.
I don't even want to make any speculations, you know, because hell, it'll be all over the internet tomorrow.
That is true. That is true.
So I won't say never. I won't say no.
Now, you have, I mean, being linked with him forever, obviously the day is going to come where they want to put Undertaker into the Hall of Fame. And I've always kind of thought about this in the sense that, you know, Undertaker's the one guy where even in 2009, they work very, very hard to protect his character. I mean, you never see him out of character. I mean, everybody, people have, you know, Twitters nowadays. They've got their Facebooks and their websites and everything like that. Undertaker's that guy that they never show the real guy. And I always wondered how they would do the Hall of Fame, because it's kind of hard to, you know, how do you honor the guy and have him do a speech without having him just talk about people resting in peace? You know what I mean? And then obviously the other question is, you know, would you be open to inducting him? Which I presume the answer would obviously be yes.
Hell no, I wouldn't want to have anything damn good to do with it. You know that.
Of course.
Please. Please. That's just like, you know, we've talked about writing books before, you know, Taker writing a book or whatever. And he just feels, and I feel the same way. That's why I have, you know, I can't say that I haven't written a book. I've certainly pretty much got a book, you know, good to go, but you want to tell the truth about things, you know? And, man, we've been down a lot of roads. We've been down so many roads in this business and seen so many of our brothers and sisters, you know, pass away and the personal experiences that we've had. And Mark feels the same way that I do. If you can't come out and tell the absolute truth, we really don't want to write that book. We really don't want to write it. And the last chapter certainly hasn't been written yet anyway. So I don't know. I really don't. He's such a unique character, a unique individual, and I can hear him say, oh, Percy's kissing his ass again. No, I'm not kissing his ass. He's just a friend.
Having worked so long down in Texas, and you mentioned World Class, I don't know if we've ever actually talked about this before. It's been, like I said, it's been a while since you've been on, but did you get a chance to see the Heroes of World Class and then the WWE version of the Von Erich story?
Yes, I've seen both of them. I have copies of them both, yes.
What were your thoughts on both of them?
I think that a lot of stuff was left out, you know, especially the latter couple years was left out, you know, because the whole story certainly wasn't told. The Eric Embry era, you know, and all that time there wasn't included in any of that, which really, because I was a major part of that, of course. I don't know, the World Class years, they just, sometimes they seem like a dream. When I actually sit back and think how many years ago it's been now, my God, you know, every time we hit mark an anniversary of one of the Von Erichs' death, it just, it still tears my heart out. I love those guys to death. I love Fritz and David and Mike and Kerry and Chris, and God, I helped break Chris in the business. You know, I had his first match. I just love those guys, and I don't know. World Class is a very, very special subject for me. I stayed there for 6 years, you know, 6 years prior to going to Vince.
Yeah.
And gosh, what I've seen and experienced during those 6 years, it was certainly a firm foundation for all my years in the business. You know, I came in there with Rick Rude from Florida. I started out with Rick Rude in Florida. And the Missing Link, you know, started managing him down in Championship Wrestling from Florida in the mid-'80s, 85. And as a matter of fact, we were there when Eddie Graham killed himself. We were working the territory then. And we went from there to Dallas. And gosh, the rest is history. I just don't know. You know, when I have conversations like this with people, I just don't know, Brian, where these years have gone. They just, sometimes it seems like a dream, and sometimes it seems like a nightmare. The years have just went, whoosh.
Yeah, that was actually.
Lord, have mercy. I mean, they just, and you know, because you work in the ring yourself, besides doing the media stuff that you do. In this business, the years do go by really, really quick. And we, I'm sitting here in my home office here, and it looks more like a museum than anything else. It's my private little office. Nobody comes in here but me unless I invite them in. I have pictures, you know, and wards and stuff all over my walls, and I'm looking around here, and I'm looking at a picture of me and Rick Rude standing in the middle of the ring in Texas Stadium when he wrestled Bruiser Brody for the then WCCW championship when they pulled out of the NWA. And then there's another picture next to that. There's a picture of me and Bret Hart and Kevin Nash and Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker and Razor Ramon all in one picture in a recording studio in New York doing an album for WWE. Then there's right next to that's a picture of me standing between Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy in 1978 before the word Freebird was ever even coined. It's just, I'm getting goosebumps, you know. It's just I've been so blessed to experience and do what I've done in this industry because I've been a fan since forever, and I'm still a fan, and will always be a fan. I always get asked, what do you think about today's product? You know, my God, it's 2010. Things have changed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Jesus, you can't, if you're still rolling downhill, you know, thinking you're still in the 70s and 80s, you're lost. You're completely lost. We have, let me just mention this real quick. Some folks know about this, some don't. I'm born and raised here in Mobile, Alabama, in Gulf Coast Wrestling. We have a wrestlers' reunion here every year, the first weekend of March, which is this coming weekend. This year will be our 19th annual reunion. It's not a fan festival. It's just for the boys. Only those that are currently in the business or have been in the business are allowed in, and we screen our membership. Like I said, this will be our 19th year. Last year, we had close to 300 guys here. You know, and people say, is kayfabe still alive? You know, there's a little bit of kayfabe still alive here at our reunion. We don't even like to tell who's there. But I can tell you the top names in the business come to Mobile, Alabama, the first week of every March, and they're here. And you, some folks would really be surprised who shows up here every year. And this is something I'm really excited about because I'm on the board of directors, and you got to remember, this is where I started in the business. You know, this is where I grew up watching guys like Cowboy Bob Kelly, Ken Lucas, Mike Boyette, the Fargos, good old Southern traditional professional wrestling. This is where I started. This is where my heart is, and this is where I still am. So this is something that's really exciting for me, our Gulf Coast Wrestlers reunion, and really looking forward to a great weekend. There's some names. There's a couple names coming that have never been here before. And I know the fans would love to hear about it, but I'm just not that type of name dropper. Wait till next week; you'll probably be able to find it somewhere on the internet.
Sure, yeah.
But I'm not going to be the one to drop the names.
When you talk about looking back at these memories, I mean, is it kind of it seems the way you're describing it? It's almost like it. In some ways, it feels like it was just yesterday, and in other ways, it feels like this is just a whole different lifetime ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Most of the memories are just as fresh as yesterday. And then you're right about being a lifetime ago. Because what an industry, you know, that we love. And I've just, people talk about the guys passing away in the business. I've known them all. I've known them all. Some of them I've been to their house. They've been to my house. You know, I've played with their kids. They've played with my kids. Gosh, and so I think I might have, finally, I don't know if I should, I don't even know how to explain this. I don't know if I have the vocabulary to even explain how I feel about this subject, but I don't know if I've become callous now, you know, as so many have gone. When I hear another one has gone, you know, I kind of go, damn, you know, and you still in the back of your mind goes, who's going to be next? Because there'll be another one, you know, there will be. Thank God they're not as coming as fast as they were there for a little while.
Yeah.
But things have gotten better. You know, Vince, I don't care what people say about Vince's wellness program. It's a good thing. It helps. In fact, I just got a letter just a couple of days ago, you know, that was sent out to all the talent that had been under booking contracts with Vince inviting you again. Every year you get a letter from them. If you do have a substance abuse problem, they give you a number, they give you a name, and it's all private. Call them, and they will help you free of charge. And thank God I've been very blessed that I haven't had those problems. And but so many of my friends have, and so many of them are gone.
I think anybody who's followed wrestling for, you know, a decade or you know, two decades or longer, I mean, I think they all understand what you're saying as far as, you know, guys go at a distressing rate sometimes. And I guess the question to you is you kind of mentioned, you know, you use the term callous because, you know, you see them and here's another one. Is it more surprising to you nowadays? Maybe surprising is not the right word, but what do you find more fascinating, the names that you knew that have passed on, or when you see somebody entering the business? I mean, think of all the second generation guys we've got nowadays. I mean, is it in a way more surprising where, my God, that's Ted DiBiase's son. I remember
exactly.
Him when he was born. He's
exactly.
Here on Raw.
Exactly. I mean, all these babies, I mean, just like my kid, you know. He was born, like I said, he learned how to walk in the Sportatorium ring.
Yep.
All these other kids did, too. Randy Orton did, you know, and DiBiase's kids, and there's a bunch more in the wings ready to step up to the plate. What a business. I don't know if there's another business like it in the world. I really don't. I just don't.
Yeah, I don't have children, but I know that, you know, I remember watching, this was during the Monday Night Wars, you'd see little Reed Flair out there, or Nick Hogan. You know, you'd see these,
yeah.
They were such little kids, and I guess, you know, the people that have children realize this better than I do, but they grow up really fast, and
I remember when they were born, you know?
Yeah.
God, it makes me feel so fucking old. I'm only 55. I mean, I guess I am old. I'm 55 years old, you know, but when I see these kids, you know, doing what they're doing and remember that I was in the business when they were born and here they are now working on top and some of the big, you know, the largest arenas in the world. Damn, I'm an old fart.
or Stephanie McMahon is now head of creative.
Yeah. Just remember when me and Mark started there, where Stephanie and Shane were. Stephanie was just a little girl.
Yep.
Shane was just getting, you know, and Shane was in college. And they grew up. They grew up around us. You know, I watched them grow up, and they're just real special to me. They really are.
Now, I know that you mentioned your son learning to walk in the Sportatorium ring, and another name that now, Lacey Von Erich. I mean, she's, you know, she's working with TNA, you know, a lot of the people that were there during that period, remember, she was just a little girl sitting there in the front row.
I was there when she was born. When you said that, I have a flashback when I hear her name sometimes, if I see her on television, when me and Carrie were in the WWF at the same time, you know, early on, you know, 1990, 1991. And I was still living in Dallas there for a while because when I started for Vince, I was living in Dallas. And my oldest son was still in school. I guess he was in about second or third grade when I started in WWE or WWF then. So me and Carrie would fly in and out of Dallas together all the time. Carrie was so special to me. I love him to death. I don't want to get off on that subject. But anyway, talk back to Lacey. I can remember getting off the planes as we would get home in Dallas. You know, we would be going on the road with Vince for umpteen days, you know. And as we come down the jetway, standing there in the door, would be Carrie's wife and his two little girls. And one of them was Lacey, just little teeny girls. And now the years have gone by, and, you know, here we are. Carrie's gone. Lacey's, you know, on television as a wrestler. What would a Carrie thought about that? He'd probably have been tickled shitless.
I actually have a couple of questions about the Von Erichs and some others from that era that people have emailed many times and asked this question, and obviously you'd be a much better person to answer it. But we'll start with Carrie. Someone just asked this question a couple of days ago. If Carrie had not had the substance abuse problems that he had, how big do you think he would have gotten in WWE? I mean, would he have taken over as the new Hulk Hogan? How big do you think he could have been?
He would have been as big as Vince let him be. and I know you understand that statement. Some folks don't understand it, but you're as big in that company. You're as big as Vince let you be.
Yeah.
He would have been that big. He very well could have been a Hulk Hogan. He was just Kerry had such a big heart. He was just and such a fantastic talent in the ring. I just can't say too much about the guy. He was just Kerry. He was great.
Yeah. And the other name that people often ask about is and the question is always, if Bruiser Brody had not been murdered in 1988, do you think that he would have gone to WWF, and how big would he have gotten?
I don't know. Frank certainly wasn't a carry. I mean, I love Frank to death. We were dear, dear friends. He had the book there for a while in Dallas while I was there, And I worked with him on a daily basis because I worked in the office there in Dallas and learned so much from him. But Frank was such a unique individual. He was I'm trying to find the words I want to use. He was so headstrong. He was so independent. I don't know what that relationship, you know, would have been like. He certainly could have changed himself, you know. He certainly could have adapted as the business changed, but I could see Kerry being more of a giant, huge figure in that sense than Frank Brody, Frank Goodish.
We got a couple of questions here from some of the listeners. This person wants to know, you just got finished apparently doing voiceovers for the SmackDown versus Raw game, and are you a character in that game, or can you talk at all about what your involvement is, or if you're involved
in
a storyline?
They didn't tell me that I couldn't talk about it, so I guess I can. Yeah, they flew a couple guys in from L.A. just last week here to my hometown, and they rented a recording studio, and we went down and recorded some voiceovers for the Raw SmackDown 2011. I think it's going to be released in the fall, and I am a character. It was a lot of fun, a lot of unique stuff. I don't want to really go into a lot of the details and ruin it for a lot of the people. Maybe they don't want me talking about it. I don't know. But I am one of the characters, a playable character, and it sounds like fun. I had a good time because I hadn't done, you know, I had been away from doing things like that for about 3 years, 3.5 years. I went back into funeral service full time in 2006, and I've been dedicated. I've been managing a brand new funeral home and business here on the Gulf Coast, and dedicating everything to that. So I haven't had this left very little time for any wrestling at all. But things have changed a little bit, and I'm starting to, do a few things that I've missed so much. Like next week, March 12th and 13th, I think it is. I'm going to Atlanta, and I'm going to be a part of this Legends Mania event that's going to be in Atlanta on March 12th and 13th. And it's just chock full of friends of mine and legends from the industry. And this is the first thing that I've done a major appearance or industry-wise in almost 4 years. And I'm really excited about it. I even told the promoter was going to fly me up there and everything. I said, no, I want to drive. It's only 5 hours from Mobile anyway, Atlanta is.
Yeah.
And I need this drive. I need this trip. I need, like we talked earlier about me losing my wife and everything. And I need wrestling just as much as I need anything else. Wrestling is still a part of my life as anything else. And it will always will be. Even though I might not be involved, you know, all the time, 24/7. You know, Brian, as well as I do. Once it's in your blood, it's like a drug. It never comes out.
Yeah.
And at my age and with my resume in the business, I'm here to stay. So you don't know. Since some of the promoters, the indie promoters, have heard that I'm doing this, and I've been turning. I turn down things. I'm not bragging or anything, but I turn down things like this all the time. So I've been getting kind of bombarded, which is a good thing. It's good to feel that you wanted. You know, it's nice to know that you're still wanted after all these years. And I expect that I will be doing some more things, you know. And I'm really excited about it. Really am.
You know, on the video game front, I hear those royalties for the video games are shockingly big.
Yeah, that's another thing that's been a good thing. You know, I just, I still get my royalty checks.
Yeah.
You know, I've done a, I don't have to tell you what I've done. I've been blessed to do a lot of things with Vince's company through the years, with The Undertaker and everybody else, you know. And I still get royalties off to all that stuff, off the dolls and the games and the videos and the DVDs and this and that and the other, you know. And sometimes it's just a little portion of a cent a piece, but those portions of a cent add up after a while. So I still get those royalty checks, you know, which is very, very nice. And, hell, you won't hear me, bitch.
You know, you mentioned the funeral home. You'd gone back and done some work there, and it would just seem that there would be some people that would have followed wrestling but were unaware that this was your job, and they would show up at the funeral home, and they would see you there and think, this has to be a rib.
Yeah.
Why is Paul Bearer here?
Happens all the time. All the time, because you got to remember, you know, I'm on the Gulf Coast. I'm in Alabama. You know, I'm down on the heart of Dixie, and you know, NASCAR, wrestling, and country music. You know, and it was really amazing sometimes that, and a lot of times I would forget. You know, hell, I'm Bill Moody, I'm Paul Bearer, I'm Percy Pringle, I'm whatever. But when I'm involved in the funeral business, doing what I do, you know, serving the families, I forget all about that stuff. But they remind me really quick, you know. They'll come into my office, you know, whether they're making arrangements for their mother or something, and then they'll start giving me a funny look. And I'm not thinking along those lines. I'm thinking about assisting them and helping them with the death of their loved one. But they recognize me. And are you, you know? And, well, yeah. There ain't but one face like this, thank God. But it really helped out a lot, because a lot of folks down here remember me, you know, from those years, and as Percy Pringle as well as being Paul Bearer. And it really helped what I did a lot, because they felt like they knew me. We had a connection there, you know, and we're... It was a good thing. There was never a negative of me working in the funeral business, having wrestling as a shadow. It's always been a positive for me. It really has.
Yeah, I would actually think that it would. I don't know how to say it, but I mean maybe it would kind of lighten up the atmosphere. It takes their mind off the tragedy that occurred, in just the sense that wow, this is an interesting thing here.
Brian, I've had folks say, Paul, would you go up there and stand by Mama's casket and let us take a picture, y'all? Now, you know, are any other words necessary? Mama was a big wrestling fan, you know. Mama would love it. They would leave my funeral home, and I could hear them in the parking lot. Wait, Uncle George here. Paul Bearer's bomb mama. You know, it's just an amazing thing. It really is. And it did help lighten the moment. And like I said, it made a connection there that really helped out, you know, in what I do in death care. It really did.
This person here says, what are your memories of the angle in World Class where they tore the World Class banner down? How on earth did they get the fans to think of World Class as being the heels and to cheer the change to USWA?
See, that's a part we were talking about earlier when you were talking about the videos about World Class and everything. That part was left out. That storyline and everything wasn't touched. And that was some very, very important times there. How that angle went down, the storyline there, and people wonder, how did Eric Embry, you know, how did this guy seemingly from nowhere that looked like a regular person off the street do what he did with the end there with that company? And I can't explain it. You have to ask. I'm sure you've seen the tapes and the films from those days, Brian. I know you have, and probably a lot of the fans listening have too. But I can't explain it. I'll never forget that moment when we tore. I cried. I had tears in my eyes when me and Eric tore that banner down from the wall of the Sportatorium, because like we discussed earlier, I love World Class Wrestling. I love the Von Erich family. I love that building. It's just so sad that it's all gone. That the building, not only is World Class Wrestling gone, or the Von Erichs gone, the Sportatorium is gone. It's all fucking gone.
That was one of the things in Heroes of World Class when Kevin Von Erich goes back to the Sportatorium shortly before they tear the place down. And
right.
That was a rather haunting moment.
Yeah, it's. I just love that building. And thank God I just was able to experience that stuff. And a lot of people, you know, a lot of these young kids break into the business, they ask me about that all the time, you know, and I won't hesitate to sit down and try to tell them about it. But there's a lot of things in this business, Brian, and you know as well as I do, and a lot of people listening, that, you know, someone can't tell you about. You have to experience it. I can't tell you what it was like to walk down the aisle with The Undertaker in Wembley Stadium with 87,000 people there. I can't tell you what that was like.
Yeah.
Unless you waddled in those shoes of mine, you know, there's no way that I can make you understand what it felt like. What it felt like to work in Madison Square Gardens, or what it felt like to work in the Cow Palace in San Francisco, or in Hong Kong, or in Singapore, or in Kuwait, or Dubai, or here in my hometown of Mobile, Alabama. I just can't explain to you what it's like. You have to experience that for yourself, and to have lived all those dreams for so many years, and they finally come true. And I probably said it 1,000 times in this little short interview, I'm so blessed, and very, very blessed. Blessed to experience, you know, to live the dreams I had as a little boy, you know, come as a little country boy in Mobile, Alabama, to have married such a wonderful wife as my wife, Diana, and to spend the years that I did with her, and to have two wonderful sons and two beautiful granddaughters, and still to be alive and still be healthy, and still I know that I'm not done yet. I'm not done yet. This interview is not over. There'll be another one.
Yeah.
You can call me anytime you want.
You know, I know you mentioned probably not being able to explain it, but when you talk about being in front of a crowd of, you know, 80,000 people here at Wembley Stadium, I mean, what is it like in the sense that it would seem to me that there would be so many people there that it would almost seem like you weren't really there, if that makes any sense. Like when you're in front of 100 people, I mean, you could see 100 eyeballs or 200 eyeballs looking
right
at you, and you realize that you're somewhere where everybody's looking at you. But when you have that many people there, it would almost seem like you weren't really a part of that, if that makes any sense.
Oh, it does to me. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's such a surreal situation, and I just remember stepping out. There's certain parts I don't forget when me and Mark stepped through the curtain. In fact, Mark, I'm sure you've seen the film of that event that night. Mark was riding on the back of a hearse. They had the back door open to the hearse. He was standing up on the back of the hearse. I was walking, or waddling, one of the two, in front of the hearse. I had to walk in front of the hearse, and I just knew. I was thinking the whole time, oh, shit, I'm going to slip and fall. This fucking hearse is going to run over me, and I'm going to be killed right here in front of 80-something thousand people. But when we first come through the curtain, it's breathtaking. You just go, you know, like I said before, I'm a kid from Mobile, Alabama, you know. I go to indie shows around here with 75, 100, 150 people, just like, you know. And then when you think back, gosh, once again, I won't say it again, I've been blessed. What else can I say? I've been very blessed.
It would almost seem like it would be more nerve-wracking to be in front of 200 people than in front of 80,000.
I guess, probably, maybe, I don't know. But, you know, when you've been doing this shit for 30 years, you know, it just kind of, I don't know. I don't know.
Let's do two more here before we wrap it up. This person wants to know, back in the day when there was something, let's say you opened up the urn and green mist came out, or there was, I know there were times you opened it up and there was a big spotlight coming out. He basically wants to know, what kind of stuff was in the urn for those incidents?
Man, I really, well, first of all, the two incidents were two separate urns.
Sure.
The original urn that which I have right here, I have the urns right here in front of me.
I was going to say, do you have the urns?
Right here on my shelf.
Yeah.
I have the original urn right here in front of me. I'm looking at it right now. How they done that, I don't know. It was Vince's special effects man that they'd done some kind of pyrotechnic gimmick inside of it that when the lid came off, it ignited some kind of, I don't know, some kind of substance that burned. And that son of a bitch got so hot, I couldn't hold it. It was so damn hot from that stuff pouring out of it. And then the one about with the light come out of it. Now, what a rib that was, Brian. Holy shit.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, Vince likes the rib. I'm sure y'all have heard about it. Vince liked the rib, you know, and he liked the rib old Paul Bear, too, and that urn was the damn rib. That urn weighed about 35 pounds, and holding that big fat holding that big fat damn urn with a it had an airplane landing light inside of it.
That's what it was.
It was a light off an airplane powered by batteries, and most of the weight was from the batteries that it took to do. In fact, we had to plug the urn in the wall and charge it before I went to the ring. Oh, yes, I got to charge my urn up. Oh, the power of the Undertaker's in there. It really come out of the wall from the power company, right?
Sure.
But then, oh, Percy, you done that so good. I think you ought to take that to all the house shows.
Take it on the road.
Ha, 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 ha. Percy had to haul that big son of a bitch in his case. It had a case it come in, too. Total of about 75 pounds to all the house shows. But they paid me well. It was fun. I did it. And then after a while, it kind of wore off. It didn't last long. About 3 or 4 weeks, they forgot about it, and I went back carrying my old little urn again.
I can just imagine if this were 2010 and you tried to go through airport security with a 75...
Oh, shit. You ain't kidding.
What is this,
absolutely,
sir? It's an urn with a battery in it.
Right. Or, you know, or the other urn without the battery, you know. Yeah, I always worried about that I would, and I never did. I never had a problem with it because most of the people were familiar with the gimmick. The gimmick, thank God, the gimmick was pretty well known back in those days, you
sure.
know, in the 90s and stuff. And most people knew who we were because we came in and out of the group usually, and I would be asked, "Where's your urn? Where's your urn?" They want to see the urn. You know, what's in the urn? And there's been a lot of things in that urn, Brian, through the years. A lot of things. Little miniatures of Jack Daniels, and there's been a lot of things in that urn through the years, Brian.
Sure.
I've been known to pull a rib or two myself.
Now, the final question here, this person, I guess going back to World Class, any memories of the Chris Adams-Steve Austin feud?
Oh, my God, yes. That was some fun times.
Could you have ever fathomed that Steve Austin was going to be as big as he got?
Oh, absolutely not. But I knew he was going to be big. I knew he had that proverbial it factor. But to be what he became, there was no way because there never was anybody like that before. some folks might know, may not know, that I work with Chris Adams' wrestling school there at the Sportatorium. Like I said, I had an office there in the Sportatorium. And I would help Chris, you know, with his wrestling school and teach interviews and stuff. And I'll never forget Steve Williams sitting out there in the audience. And he had it from day one. We, you know, right off the bat, we would get the new students to cut a promo just to see what they could do, you know, without any training or anything. Boy, he was right there from day one.
Yeah.
And then he started working. I became his manager. We had the started working the angles, you know, with Chris and his wives worked little Chris Von Erich into the story and had a real, real good time. That was some a lot of fun times doing that stuff. And gosh, Chris Adams is gone too.
Yeah.
You know, gosh. But anyway, let's send this on a positive note and not a sad note.
Let's send this on a positive note and talk about, you've got some big things coming up here. We've talked about the show that's coming up this, and by the way, all these things you can check out on percypringle.com. That's the website to go to. It'll link up to his blog as well. And you've got the indie date coming up with your son. You've got the Gulf Coast Wrestling Reunion and Legends Mania. And obviously the Gulf Coast is not open to the public, but Legends Mania is the place to go if you want to meet up with Percy. And a lot of great stuff there on the blog. And any other big things coming up?
Just being free for right now. You know, like I talked about earlier, I've been so tied down with my business. I've actually been on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for 3.5 years straight.
Wow.
The only day I didn't work was the day of my wife's funeral. And this last week and a half, I'm to steal my friends, Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy and Buddy Roberts' Freebird song, I've been a Freebird for about a week and a half. And it feels so good to be able to go to sleep at night, not worrying that my phone was going to ring, or to be able to do what I want to do and not be tied down by a telephone for these, you know. So I'm in the middle of a transition here trying to decide what I'm going to do. I'm going to always be associated with wrestling and with funeral service, either together, separate, or whatever. That's me. That's Bill Moody. That's my life. So I will continue to be doing that, and but I appreciate you plugging my website. I've had this website for a number of years now, and I try to keep my blog as current as possible. Sometimes I just don't have time or or don't feel like updating it, but I do. And so if you want to keep up with the fat man, that's where to find me. And Brian, I appreciate you, and you do a great job at what you do, and I've known you for a few years now, and we appreciate you. You ever need me, you know how to find me.
Well, I want to thank you very much for doing the show. It's always a great show, and when people found out you were coming on, they said it's been far too long. So hopefully we'll get you back on a little bit sooner than we did this past time. But
all right, man. Well, you take care of yourself and be blessed, and we'll talk again soon. All right.
Will do. Thanks very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We shall talk to you again later on tonight.